Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and Uncle John's Bathroom Reader plunges into music. Question number one. It was on this very day, back in 1992, that the U.S. Postal Service announced that a majority of people nationwide voted to prefer which version of Elvis Presley for an official postage stamp. Was that A, a young Elvis? Was it B, a more mature-looking Elvis? Was it C, an Elvis in a rhinestone outfit? Or was it D, an Elvis in a pink Cadillac? And question number two. For most of the 19th century, most polkas were written for violins. But as Polish immigrants came to America in the 20th century, they brought with them another instrument which proved much more versatile and is now associated with polka music. What was that new instrument? Is it A, the tuba, B, the accordion, C, the piano, or D, the guitar? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote unquote, is the 4th of June. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1903, that composer Aram Ilyich Khachaturian was born. This Soviet composer was known for such compositions as Spartacus and Saber Dance. And it was 50 years ago today, 1971, that the Ed Sullivan Show aired for the last time. It was canceled after 23 years on the air. Gladys Knight and the Pips were the musical guests on this last show.
Bed and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the street the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living.
Dolly Parton's 9 to 5 introduces our country music news. It's entitled Blonde Ambition. It's written by Christy Tolley and published in AAA/GO Summer 2021 issue. Dolly Parton is the timeless sunshine, inspiration, and common sense we all need right now. Born and raised in the small Tennessee mountain town of Locust Ridge, Dolly Parton was the 4th of 12 children. Her family endured financial hardships throughout her life. However, Dolly's determination to pursue a successful career in music never wavered. She packed her bags the night of her high school graduation and headed to Nashville the next morning. You'd be hard-pressed to find a pop icon more universally adored than Dolly Parton, and it's no wonder. Her ability to engage with and relate to people of all ages and walks of life is inspiring. She sold over 100 million albums worldwide, earned 50 Grammy Award nominations, 3 Emmy Award nominations, and 1 Tony Award nomination. In addition to her musical success, Dolly's big heart and strong faith have guided her to pursue other endeavors throughout her 6-decade career, including helping fund the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. This timeless actress, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and megastar shares a bit of her life and work with this AAA interview. This issue of Go Magazine celebrates what makes Mountain Town so special. What are some of your favorite aspects of mountain life? Well, I love being from the Smoky Mountains. They are just so beautiful no matter the time of the year. And that's why we have so many people who want to come visit the area to see the beauty God has put right outside our back door. But for me, growing up in the Smokies was all about family and friends who feel like family. It seems like even now, everyone is so close in those small mountain towns, and I think it's because, well, especially when I was growing up, you really had to depend on each other to make it through. But that is what is so special and what I remember so much, the relationships we all had, even my little coat of many colors, which I wrote the song about, the song that really means the most to me. It all came about because one of our neighbors knew my mama could put those scraps of fabric so good use with all of us kids around. Right now, I wish the world could realize how good it would be if we could all depend on each other to lift one another up when we need it most. Your Imagination Library Children's Literacy Program celebrates 26 years this year. What compelled you to create the program? The Imagination Library came from a serious place in my heart. My dad and a lot of my relatives couldn't go to school when they were young because they had to work. My daddy couldn't read or write, and it always bothered me because I knew it bothered him. He was the smartest man I've ever known, and I can't imagine what he could have done had he known how to read and write. When I decided I want to start a charity, I knew I wanted to help kids develop a love for learning and literacy, so that is what we did. I made sure my daddy was there to help me get the program started. So the Imagination Library really is in honor of him. I'm so proud of how many kids we've been able to help through the years, and I know it would put a smile on his face to know kids around the world are learning how to read because of him. We're always looking to expand the program because my number one goal is to get as many books in the hands of kids as we possibly can. The folks at the foundation are always working hard to find more ways to expand us into new communities where we aren't currently located. The pandemic created challenges that I don't think any of us could have predicted. When you face challenges or difficult situations, what are ways you turn them around? It certainly has been a challenge, but I think God is wanting us to slow down and rely on Him to help us through what is going on. I've tried to do so much as I can during the time to help folks realize we're all in this together and to make it to the other side. We're all still going to have to be in it together. I know I'm just a little of me, but I'm trying to do my part, and I hope everyone else will as well, so we can experience the brighter days that are coming. Of all the places you've traveled to, what was your favorite trip? One of my favorite things has always been to get to our little RV and just travel the country. I have my big tour bus, but my husband Carl and I have always had RVs because we love to get out and see the world when I have some downtime. We love traveling the back roads and seeing all the things you miss on the interstate.
What good is sitting alone in your room? Come hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret.
And in jazz and Broadway music news, we have this article entitled Broadway Buzz. Broadway looks to reopen at 100% capacity on September the 14th. This is written by Lindsay Sullivan, published in Broadway.com, May the 5th, 2021.
Start celebrating right this way. Your table's waiting. What good's permitting some prophet of doom to wipe every smile away? Life is a cabaret, old chum. So come to the cabaret.
After announcing that most COVID-19 capacity restrictions will be lifted in New York and New Jersey beginning on May 19th, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said today that Broadway can reopen at 100% capacity beginning on September the 14th. Broadway is at the core of our New York identity and a big part of our economy, which employs countless performers and show creators. And beginning this September, the show will go on, he said during his announcement on May the 5th. The simplest formula, 100% vaccinated. You want to come to a theater? 100% vaccinated. The theaters will have to make those decisions. You want to open with 100% vaccinated. God bless. Theaters will be subject to the state's final approval of each theater operator's health and safety protocols. Ticket sales are aiming to resume this month. We are thrilled that Governor Cuomo clearly recognizes the impact of Broadway's return on the city and state's economy and the complexity of restarting an entire industry that has been dormant for over a year, said Charlotte St. Martin, president of the Broadway League, in a statement. We remain cautiously optimistic about Broadway's ability to resume performances this fall and are happy that fans can start buying tickets again. The Actors Equity Association also responded to the announcement. Today's news means we are one step closer to the safe reopening of not just Broadway, but jobs for thousands of workers in the New York area, says Mary McCall, executive director of AEA. We look forward to continuing our conversations with the Broadway League about a safe reopening and know that soon the time will come when members can go back to doing what they do best, creating world-class theater. Broadway theaters shut down due to the coronavirus pandemic on March the 12th, 2020. At that time, 31 productions were running, including 8 new shows in previews. Additionally, 8 productions were in rehearsals preparing to open that spring. Shows were initially set to shut down through April the 12th, 2020, even though through June the 7th, 2020, and then through September the 6th, 2020, and then through January the 3rd, 2021. May 30th was the most recent target date for Broadway's reopening. Off-Broadway, Blindness, Perfect Crime, and the Office of Musical Parody have already begun performances with COVID-19 safety procedures in place as well as reduced capacity. Broadway's Diana is set to begin performances on December the 1st, and The Music Man is scheduled to begin performances on December the 20th. And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled, Can You Make Electric Cars Sound Good? BMW hires Oscar-winning composer Hans Zimmer, and it's not the only one trying to rival an engine soundtrack. This is published in thisismoney.co.uk by Ray Massey for the Daily Mail on the 6th of May, 2021. For any brand that wants its next car to be a blockbuster, what could be better than getting an Oscar-winning composer to write its soundtrack? That's what BMW has done by hiring Hans Zimmer, who has penned the scores for a host of hit films, including Gladiator, the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, The Last Samurai, The Da Vinci Code, 12 Years a Slave, and Dunkirk. He won an Oscar for his The Lion King score and has earned 10 other nominations so far. But what can an award-winning composer do for motorists? Well, I've had the privilege of talking to him exclusively to find out. He says his love of cars, and BMWs in particular, began as a child living near Frankfurt. In Germany, my dad was an engineer. He was car mad. I grew up surrounded by sports cars. He loved doing rallies, though he inevitably lost. We had BMWs my whole life. As a kid, there was a strong emotional connection. The sound of the BMW engine meant things are safe. Everything's fine. Mom and Dad are going to be home. Hans' memories showed that the clunk of a car door closing sounds like the ignition firing, and the throaty roar of a sports car's V8 all add to our connection to motor vehicles, whether we realize it or not. And car makers actually spend countless hours tuning cars to make them sound just right. They often enhance the sound with technology that boosts the natural noise of the engine through their exhaust system. But sometimes they use digital dark arts and even loudspeakers to boost the sound inside the cabin. But with the government decreeing that sales of new petrol and diesel vehicles will be outlawed from 2030, a problem arises. Four purely electric cars are almost zero sound, as well as being zero emissions. To ensure that vulnerable road users, pedestrians, cyclists, and visually impaired people, can hear and anticipate their approach, they must make some noise. To this end, new laws have been added, brought in that require electric cars to emit artificial sounds. But what kind? Inner composer Zimmer, who I phoned to ask how he's putting his movie skills to work on soundscapes for inside and outside cars. He said, "We have an extraordinary opportunity to turn electric driving in a BMW into a very special experience with the help of great sounds." While an electric car may have dramatic performance, the near silence of the electric drive can risk making the experience less feel soulless. To help counter this, Zimmer says the sound repertoire of the BMW i4 covers the variety of driving modes. For example, sport is a soft sound that rises to a crescendo, while the cruising mode is similar but softer and more ethereal. Acoustic accompaniments to a door opening or starting the electric car are also part of the vehicle's soundscape. He explains that the creative process starts by imagining someone getting into their car on a gray November day in Munich. Then he works on a beautiful sound to make their spirits feel more uplifted. Does he think that there is any potential for wider personalization with motorists commissioning their own off-the-shelf interior sounds as electric cars become increasingly popular and eventually the norm? Well, that's what I'm hoping. It's a way you can totally personalize the car other than giving it a new spray paint. Just as the design team at BMW is creating a revolution, we can do the same with sound. And in classical music news, we have this article entitled, "Impromptu Applause Erupted During the First Tuning Note. Music Returns to Concert Halls in the UK." This is published on May the 18th, 2021 in ClassicFM.com by Rosie Pentreath. Classical music lovers have been sharing their sheer joy at being back in front of live music as lockdown restrictions ease and venues open. Here are the moments that sum it up best. Classical music and opera lovers have described feelings of quote-unquote pure joy and being ecstatic to attend live music once again as venues started opening their doors to audiences yesterday. That was Monday, 17 May. With many people able to enjoy classical music live and in person for the first time since March 2020, venues around the country marked the easing of coronavirus lockdown restrictions by welcoming socially distanced audiences tentatively back to COVID-safe seats. And audiences that returned expressed their gratitude and joy at being back in front of live performance and their beautiful music. At the Royal Opera House, impromptu applause erupted during the first tuning note, and at London's Wigmore Hall, cellist Guy Johnson, who was in the audience, tweeted what an absolute joy it was to see so many people back in the hall. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our second question, for most of the 19th century, most polkas were written for violins. But as Polish immigrants came to America in the 20th century, they brought with them another instrument which proved much more versatile and is now associated with polka music. What was that new instrument? Was it A, the tuba, B, the accordion, C, the piano, or D, the guitar? Correct answer? Answer B's. The squeeze box, or accordion. As noted in Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, a young girl in the 1830s Eastern Europe invented a new dance called the polka. Thanks to the Bohemian Army, the polka dance spread from dance hall to dance hall all over Europe, making it a huge fad in the mid-19th century. Much like rock and roll would be 100 years later, the polka was embraced by the youth culture and vilified by grown-ups who had only recently accepted the much slower waltz as their dance of choice. Accordions, invented about the same time as the polka, became popular, allowed a single musician to play melody, harmony, rhythm, and bass, perfect for polka parties. The polka's second golden age really took full swing in the Midwest after World War II, where millions of European refugees settled and brought their culture with them. Polka legends such as Frank Yankovic and Lawrence Welk helped legitimize the lively music for adults, many of whom were appalled by rock and roll. And the answer to our first question. It was on this very day, back in 1992, that the U.S. Postal Service announced that a majority of people nationwide voted to prefer which version of Elvis Presley for an official postage stamp. Was that A, a young Elvis, B, a more mature-looking Elvis, C, an Elvis in a rhinestone outfit, or D, an Elvis in a pink Cadillac? Correct answer. Answer A, a young Elvis. As noted in songfacts.com, when the United States Post Office decided to do an Elvis stamp, they put it up for a vote, a young Elvis or an old Elvis image, and young Elvis won by a landslide, getting more votes by a factor of 3-1. Priscilla Presley made the announcement at Graceland. Never has the United States seen such widespread interest in a postage stamp. But such is the allure of the king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley. The United States Postal Service announcement that there will be not only an Elvis stamp, but that the public will vote on the design, sets off a national debate. The USPS first suggests the idea of a stamp honoring Elvis in 1987, 10 years after his death. Many are opposed to the idea, citing concerns about his drug use and giving credence to conspiracy theories that he's still alive. In 1992, the debt-ridden USPS moves ahead, mailing hundreds of thousands of pre-addressed ballots and offering additional ballots in the April 13 edition of People magazine. The choice is between two colorful portraits of the king, selected from 60 artist renderings. One is an airbrush and acrylic painting of young Elvis, and the second is an oil painting of old Elvis in his ubiquitous white jumpsuit. The debate over young Elvis versus old Elvis is the subject of late-night talk shows, water cooler discussions, and countless editorials. Even President Bill Clinton weighed in. He preferred the younger version of Elvis. When the 1.2 million ballots were tallied, the USPS ended the nation's suspension and announced that Young Elvis by Mark Stutzman is the decisive victory with more than 75% of the vote. The ceremony is held on the grounds of Graceland with various fans, stamp collectors, and Postal Service luminaries present. At 6:36 a.m. Memphis time, so morning news shows can cover it live, Priscilla Presley ends the suspense and reveals the winner. On January the 8th, 1993, what would have been Elvis's 58th birthday, the 29-cent stamp is put into circulation. So let's end today's program with some early Elvis, Can't Help Falling in Love.
Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information, or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
Surely to the sea.